Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Alan Spiro is the President and Chief Medical Officer for Laguna Health. He leads strategy and development for a technology-enabled digital-first recovery company dedicated to shortening recovery times and reducing costly readmissions. Alan has more than 40 years of operational and clinical experience. He has served as the Senior Vice President of Strategy and Analytics for Blue Health Intelligence and as the Chief Medical Officer for various organizations, including Anthem, Medica, and WellPoint. Alan earned his doctorate degree in medicine from Columbia University and his MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. He refers to himself as a consultant with a medical knowledge base and believes healthcare is about much more than just biology. Hello, Dr. Spiro. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
Alan, why don't you go ahead and share with us a little bit about what your role is with Laguna Health and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
I am President and Chief Medical Officer of Laguna Health. I often see myself as the strategic clinical voice for the company. And I have a lot of many years of experience in trying to bring humanism into clinical programs. And from a very tactical point of view, I manage the clinical staff. I act as part of the senior leadership and strategy group together with Yoni Stein, who is the CEO, and Yael Adam, who is the CTO and chief product officer, and just keep the excitement going as well when it comes to our employees and how we try to approach the problems we're addressing.
And Alan, you know, from my research of what I've done about Laguna Health, I understand that it is a digital health company based out of Tel Aviv, Israel. And in the first round of funding, which was last year in May, the company was able to raise $6.6 million towards its initiatives and goals, which is really remarkable. Some of the other things I'm aware of about Laguna Health is that North Shore University Health Systems actually just came into partnership or has also decided to leverage Laguna Health in terms of helping its patients when they're discharged. I'd love to learn a little bit more about Laguna's health mission, its vision, its values. Tell us more about what Laguna Health really is and how it came to be and what it's hoping to do for patients, providers, and health plans alike.
And perhaps it's best if I start with some history. The history is that Yoni and Yael, the two co-founders, worked together as engineers at Microsoft. They then went separate ways. Yoni went into a more business-oriented background after getting his MBA from Harvard Business School. I said Northwestern because he and I have this debate. I have my MBA from Northwestern, and I always insist it's better than the Harvard MBA, but we won't go there. Yael went more towards healthcare. She worked for Amazon and then went to LA Children's Hospital, where she developed systems for to make healthcare in the ICU and the pediatric ICU better for patients and for doctors. She had models built, algorithms built, and systems built that could help the doctors manage their patients. She went on to start a company called Vim in healthcare, which was very successful. Yoni went on to start a company in patent risk management, which was also very successful. I have a background in being a founder of Accolade in healthcare, which is successful. So I think the $6.6 million, which was before I joined, was because of Yoni and Yael's reputation, their knowledge that they could make things happen. They both moved back to Israel from the U.S. because of concerns, family concerns that had to do with health. And they both wanted to get into healthcare in a very big way. Even after Vim, Yael had already been in it. For me, I am in the United States. I met them and really believed that they were onto something, so joined in. The whole premise is, from both a cost and quality point of view, transitions are very hard for patients. What happens is people get lost in transitions and money is wasted. One of the most prominent of those transitions is when people leave the hospital to go home. And it's very interesting. There's this belief among patients who aren't used to the healthcare system that you go home when you're well, you're cured, you're done. That's not the truth. The truth is you go home when you no longer need a hospital level of care, but you're still sick. So you get home, you've had all these people hovering around you, whether they're helping you or not is a whole different debate we can have, but that you have these people in the hospital hovering around you, monitoring you, and then all of a sudden they say, well, go home, and nothing, it's a void. And what happens is there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of depression, and there's a lot of what I'll call logistical nightmares. You're told to don't lift more than 10 pounds. Well, first of all, you never know what 10 pounds is. Second of all, you're a young parent with a two-year-old who always wants to be picked up. The two-year-old's heavier than 10 pounds. What do you do? There are these life issues, life context issues that get in the way of your healing. There is the depression and emotional issues that get in the way. And what happens because of that is you end up with readmissions, you end up with excess cost, and you end up with people who are needing care, needing help. And that's where we come in. We're helping with those transitions.
What I saw and what I read was about how the ability for Laguna Health to provide coaching resources and support to patients that have been discharged across the nation is a strong need, no doubt. But I'm curious to know, like, how do patients and providers and health plans gain access to your services or your product? And then how do you work with each individual party to ensure seamless communication, full access, especially as we talk about, and we will talk about, health equity in different parts of the country? You know, I'm really curious because it's a growing need. And in the world that we're living in of 2022, technology has to be almost central and core to how healthcare will be delivered. Unfortunately, we all know that's not an equal playing field. So I'm curious to know, from your perspective on what Laguna's health strategy is in the space.
Yes, and it's funny because I've been involved in starting companies in health IT space, and I'm a physician and started out in practice on the south side of Chicago, so I certainly know about health equity, and I'm actually somewhat of an expert in it. I've been involved with issues of health disparities for many years, and part of what keeps me going is trying to solve these problems. It may be good to talk about it in the context of our North Shore relationship, which has started as a study. We took 400 patients. We randomized them. 200 were managed in the usual way. 200 were assigned to us to help through the transition out of hospital. Those patients included an array of insurance back coverage from Medicaid to Medicare to private insurance. Age varied tremendously. And what we found at the end was those in our group had fewer readmissions, and even more, they saved money and improved their depression ratings, their anxiety ratings. It was a positive experience. And while technology is at the core of it, any technology has to be driven by how you program it. And by the way, one of the jobs I've held in the past was head of data science for the Blue Cross Association, Blue Health Intelligence. So you have to walk a line. There are so many health computer systems that are suffering from the gee whiz syndrome, if I can call it that. They are so neat for all of those like us who are geeks and who are interested in it, and they cause confusion. What you should always be driving for is to create simplicity. And creating simplicity is highly complex. You have to create simplicity from the patient's point of view, from the member's point of view. And from the member's point of view, illness is not only physiology. It's how am I going to make a living? How am I going to get my kids and pick them up from school? How am I going to take care of my family? How am I going to do all these things that are so important for my life? And the health part, the physiology part, is only one component. So one of the things that we've done with Laguna is we've really taken the science behind that. And there is a science behind that. I'm on the board of the Institute for Patient and Provider Performance Improvement, which is an organization started by Saul Wiener and Alan Schwartz, who are academics at University of Illinois Medical School, and they're the world's expert in life context and healthcare. And they have created an organizing system for looking at life context. Life context includes emotions, it includes finances, it includes culture, language, access, transportation, all of those factors. And because they've created this framework, we've adapted that framework to discover very quickly for each person what their barriers are to recovery, what's going to get in the way of them being able to go home just in a simple way. What's also, what should they expect? So we have our stages of recovery that we've determined are very predictive of where people will be. People go home, they're very happy. We call that stage one, euphoria. Then the reality hits them. That's stage two. Stage three is when that reality that hits them causes an emotional reaction, depression, anxiety. Stage four is when they're finally beginning to cope with that, all those problems which we're helping them with. And stage five is getting back to what is normal for them, and it's sometimes a new normal. It's sometimes they have a new reality that comes from their disease, from their surgery, from whatever it was, and we have to help them through that. But being able to predict that is also part of our system. So the technology is more about the person and less about the disease, if I can put it that way. The disease is, of course, a factor. It's, of course, important. People go home with discharge instructions that they usually don't understand. We take all that and translate it into simple to-dos that go on the app, for example. But if a person can't use an app for whatever reason, which is often not even age or socioeconomic related, it's an individual issue, if I can put it that way. The number of people in poverty who actually do have a cell phone is now high, thankfully, because it's a necessity. It's just a necessity. There are a lot of community resources that they can get through our app, but we also have the people on the phone, our coaches, who are nurses, who are social workers, who will help them through it. We're not just throwing technology and saying, here, go help yourself. That's not the idea. A lot of we're now getting requests from health plans, from health systems, and saying, we really think we have excellent people. They do need your systems. They do need your training. They do need your approach. Can you give us that? Use our system, our people, and we're very happy to do that. And that's where the technology core comes in.
Alan, where do you see Laguna Health in 5 years from now? I'm sure that there's lots of, you know, strategies and concepts and ideas that you and your team have already probably identified as what we're working on, and maybe with some end goals in the next 18 months or so. But, you know, how do you see your organization playing a larger role, maybe nationwide, region-wide? You know, I'd really be curious to see in terms of what Laguna Health is set on their target list in terms of what it hopes to achieve, and how you are working to either allocate more resources, hire new people. Give me an idea of what the world of what our world will look like in 2027 with Laguna Health.
Well, in some ways, we have two major goals, which is to create systems that bring life context into the care of the patient. And we see that in both the potential for that in both health systems and health insurers. There's a variety of ways we can address this and that we hope to address this. So we are very excited about that potential. We clearly believe that there is a need for more focus on transitions. People get lost in transitions. People have trouble in transitions. The first transition is that transition from hospital to home, but that's not the only one. And you can even just say something as simple as outpatient. The transition after you have a doctor's appointment, then they say you have to do this, this, and this, and you go home totally confused. So there's you need all these pieces, and people tend not to discuss with their physician enough the life issues that are getting in the way. So when we look at it 5 years from now, we see tools like our barrier index, our system, our infrastructure, our algorithms being used very, very broadly, and not just in the US, but all over. You know, it's funny, I just got off the phone with a call up with a person who has a company in France. And I'm forever talking to people in other healthcare ecosystems in other countries. And one of the things about what we do is it's not limited to a commercial market. And there are many governments that I also think would be interested in it.
Excellent. So the market is ripe and you're absolutely poised in the right position and with the right tools and the right product. I think that's really great. And especially being a clinician, being able to talk about these challenges and as well as the products and the solutions that Laguna Health is able to offer, I think that speaks volumes. And that's one of the reasons, you know, why we started this podcast, is to have people that have moved into an executive role with clinical experience and patient-facing provider experience to talk about what they've seen, what they've determined is not just a medical problem or a medical deficiency, right? It's a resource deficiency. It's a cultural gap. There are all these things. And speaking of which, you know, I'm curious because, you know, you talked about algorithms that, you know, factor in culture, right? And so I'm always understanding, you know, when taking social determinants of health into consideration, how does that impact quality patient care? What have you seen in that space that is proven to you and now as part of the Laguna Health mission to incorporate those and teaching other competitors and new entrants into the market about why it will be critical for those to be addressed as part of solutions that are going to be forthcoming?
So the term social determinants of health is an interesting one to me because it's become almost a buzzword. It's almost like the words are said as one word. And they don't really get at the fact that each of us are unique individuals. And there's a friend of mine who's a person I admire a lot, Joe Betancourt. Joe is the head of the Health Disparity Center at Harvard at Mass General. And I've spoken at his yearly course, and he has some wonderful tapes that are meant to challenge inherent biases. So if you have, and he has one of his tapes is a very good one where you have a man with a heavy Spanish accent, wearing jeans, standing in a lawn, holding a rake and doing some yard work. And, you know, he'll stop and say, what's this man's profession? And people will say, he's a lawn worker, you know, it's so common. Well, it turns out he's a full professor at MIT. That's his profession. But we have these inherent biases. Now, does he have a cultural issue? Well, he may. I've set up programs to deal with executives at Telemundo, for example, where it's clear that, you know, their English is impeccable, but when they're stressed and in an emotional situation, they want to communicate in Spanish. That's their preferred language at that kind of situation. And that has to be recognized and acknowledged, even though they're certainly upper middle class, you know, or upper class. So we have to take people as individuals. The people who impress me the most in some ways are always the people who are in the lowest socioeconomic group. And these were many of my patients on the south side of Chicago when I was in practice. The ones who are have an illness and yet they are caring for their family, they are working, they are doing everything they need to do, and over tremendous odds. And that's, they should be lauded. They should be our heroes. And that's how we approach this at Laguna. We approach it as people are individuals. We have to understand them. Now, again, I said I'm a data geek. So the part of this that people don't get, or they people see these things as quote unquote soft, they're as opposed to hard numbers. But you can organize these types of issues into what I'll call a taxonomy, into a language. You can measure them and you can accumulate that data and it becomes very, very meaningful. And that's what we do. And that allows you to systematize this N of one approach, a customized approach that still is using systems and using the data and generating new data as well, which for many years has been my goal in healthcare, to get away from this idea that people's life, their life context is not soft. It's measurable and it's critical, and we have to pay attention to it.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Alan, let's talk a little bit about you, right? You know, we're talking about Laguna Health and, you know, all the great things that it's working on and trying to do. You know, I'm always fascinated whenever I have a guest on the show that has such an extensive work history and so many different avenues of experience, right? You know, today you're the president and chief medical officer of Laguna Health. Prior to this, as you mentioned earlier, you were the SVP of strategy and growth at Blue Health Intelligence. And even before that, you were either an executive vice president, a chief medical officer, or both at Medica, Accolade, and WellPoint, a company actually that was purchased by Anthem. And that's one of my former employers as well. So you have this, you know, beautiful tapestry of different experiences where your clinical background was then coupled with an opportunity to, you know, take the organization into new areas. And you've also mentioned the origin story of Laguna Health, which I think is phenomenal. And I'm curious to know, like, what were the determinants in this opportunity when it was presented to you? You said that, you know, you spoke with Yanni and Yael, and their mission and their ideas resonated deeply with you. But was that an easy transition for you? Was that a quick yes, let's just do this? Or what were some of the thought processes that needed to occur in order for you to determine if this was really the best step for you to take in order to advance your personal goals?
I'm a change agent. It's what I've done for 40 years. And healthcare needs a lot of change. And I look to work with people who share that propensity for change, if I can, as a first step. I also look to broaden the scope of healthcare beyond biology. to the social side, to the psychological side. People are complex and messy and wonderful. And I'm a true advocate for freedom and autonomy of individuals in many, many ways. And I don't believe that occurs in healthcare. So when I look for opportunities to foster that. When I was a founder of Accolade, that was the idea behind Accolade. And it's become a very successful company. And I'm very happy about that. I saw an opportunity to really, especially working with Yael and Yoni, to create an IT infrastructure and extend it beyond just what my staff can do to multiple organizations throughout the world in a way that can truly impact people's lives. You know, I'm also come at it in some ways, you know, my business degree is as valid as my medical degree. More years doing medical training but more years in the business world. And from a business point of view, my goal is always to make something scalable and to make it be self-sustaining. You don't self-sustain just by doing what's right. You have to create the systems that can be pay for themselves, that have some profitability built in. And that's what I try to do, to create these scalable, self-sustaining systems.
That must be very difficult. I'm speaking from my own personal experiences. Like whenever I've tried to take an idea that I was able to successfully execute on for one unit, one business unit, right? And then to try to duplicate that, even just creating another one, you know, it's difficult to retain that kind of cultural value that was fostered in that original environment. So when you talk about scalability, I certainly hope that the listeners that are listening today recognize and empathize how challenging that is. You are bringing on, you know, a new people in a new location, or you are trying to involve and influence others to adopt the same mentality with the same effort. And it's not always as successful as we would like. So for people that have been good, and I should say great at the ability to do that, my hat off to you, sir. That's a really amazing.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't like simple problems.
It takes all kinds of people, Alan. So, you know, you can have all of my complex problems and I will happily take your simple ones and we'll find a happy medium there.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Alan, tell me about, you know, again, we talked about your professional history. You've had so many great opportunities to make a difference in different people's lives, patients, providers, again, health plans, larger organizations. When you think back to all the great opportunities that you were involved in, is there one or two that stand out as milestones for you? And if you have those, I'd love to hear them. If not, you know, clearly Laguna Health is your primary objective. But beyond that, whether it's personal or professional, what else do you have on your professional bucket list that you really hope to achieve in the next 2 or 3 years?
In some ways, I don't. It might sound strange. I always used to joke with my staff that my goals professionally were to feed my family and entertain myself. And it's just that entertaining myself involves doing something that has real purpose and is meaningful. Part of being a change agent, as I mentioned earlier, is being open to change. And I've had a variety of opportunities and careers, and it's, I think it's just I've always been open to them. That does make a difference. I was the first chief medical officer for Anthem National Accounts, which was taking the national accounts business units from all the individual states and making it into a new business unit. It had 11 million lives, and that was very exciting. And I was told at that time also that, you know, it was going to be a laboratory for the rest of Anthem, which was great. It's great. So I had this very, what I'll call stable job, very good job. And someone asked me to start a company with them, which was Accolade. And he asked me when I was just, and it was a room about the size of my very small office in my home. And there were no chairs, and we were just standing there. And I said yes, because I saw the opportunity to have fun and really make change. I had started the unit at Anthem. I had gotten it running. And I think that if I had to look at my own background, it was just my willingness to do things like that.
And Accolade is definitely one of the, you've mentioned them twice, so I'd like to actually hear a little bit more about your, tell me a little bit more about Accolade. Let's go there.
Well, Accolade was a company that we started about 12, 15 years ago. It's now publicly traded. CEO now is Raj Singh. And when we were starting it, the first CEO was Tom Spann. He hired me as like third or fourth employee. And the whole idea behind it was that go to employers and help employers, their employees, and with issues related to their life and to their health in a broad way. So the way we did that was to take over the member services area. And anytime someone would call in to say, what's my benefit for, or is this provider a network? Our answer would be, well, I can tell you that. That's great. And how are you feeling? Why do you need that? And generate a discussion about what was going on with them. And then the next step was to say, and by the way, I'm the person that you're speaking with. I'm going to be your health assistant throughout all of this. And a lot of the same principles I'm talking about we put into place at Accolade. And it saved money, and it's a very high touch system, but because it's so high touch, it can be expensive. And I was there for about 10 years. We grew it from three or four of us to 700 employees in multiple locations. And then it was, then the investors decided to bring in a whole new team, which was fine, and we all moved on. But what's so interesting about it is that I came away from there saying, you know, if I can target people and situations better and really lean in even more and build more on the system side for barriers for life context issues, then this can even have a bigger impact. And that's what Laguna offers. That's what we at Laguna are doing.
Alan, you've had a great career and you're going to continue to do some great things. But I also know that, you know, as a person that has had many doors opened for me, none of those doors opened for me simply because I had the right degree or the right skill sets or the right experience. It was usually because somebody took me under their wing, or they gave me an opportunity, or they gave me a chance, or they spoke kindly or on my behalf behind closed doors. And those are some great sponsors and mentors that, you know, I really owe a lot to. I'm curious to know if there's any individual or individuals that you sort of attribute your career success to. Were there people that you would like to acknowledge on this show for having helped either develop you or bring you in and give you the resources and tools that you needed and be your absolute champion?
You know, I've had a lot of very good people who have helped me through the years. But at the same time, you know, I'm a child of immigrants. I grew up lower middle class in New York and went through the New York City public school system. And you learn in that kind of setting to really strive and to be appreciative of all help that you get. I can't really say that there was one person who groomed me. There were many people along the way. I can tell you, you know, my third grade teacher, Miss Mahoney, was great. I had the opportunity in New York to go to Science High School, which is transformative for me. It was a school, high school for gifted kids that is still around, and that was a tremendous opportunity as what I'll call a street kid. There were people along the way who certainly helped me quite a bit, but it was also serendipity, if I can put it that way. I was in practice in Chicago and was very interested in home care, for example, because I had been a nutrition fellow at Harvard and had been an MIT Harvard research fellow in nutrition. And I was in Chicago practicing, and part of my practice was nutrition. So that practice involved home care because it was home nutritional support. And I would make home visits. And I learned that home visits didn't get paid for, extremely poorly or not at all. So I started looking into that. And then I got approached by a man named Howard Bolnick, who was starting, he and Fred Manning had started a small group health insurance company. They said, you know what, we're looking for someone who's classically trained, and I had all those credentials of, you know, Columbia Medical School, University of Chicago, Harvard, all that kind of crap. That's a technical term, excuse me. And they also wanted someone who they thought differently, and home care seemed to be thinking differently. So they said, can you be our medical director for this new insurance company we're starting up? And that was a great opportunity, but I said, but all they really wanted was for someone to review charts and to have a name on the door. And I said, okay, I'll only do it if you have me in your office at least a half day a week, because I have to learn about how you guys think. I have to learn about why things get paid for and why they don't get paid for, because it doesn't make any sense to me. And that was very formative for me. I learned a lot. I decided to go to business school to learn more. I went to Northwestern while I was in practice. And each time, at each step, and it was after business school, basically, that I left practice. And at each step, it's a matter of just listening, if I can put it that way, for what's going on around you and asking questions. And it's the questions that are always important to me, not the answers, if I can put it. And I've been fortunate in asking questions my entire life, probably. And I've grown up in a culture of asking questions and in a family of asking questions. And that to me is probably the most important factor.
An inquisitive mind opens doors. I like that. Alan, when I think of where you are today and the role and the responsibilities you have, you know, there's a lot that's riding on what you're bringing to the table, but it's also a lot riding on the development of the people that report to you. Like you as a, I mean, I hate using the word father figure, but in reality, when you're a leader, you essentially are the father of that family, right? You have individuals that are tenured, you have new hires, they are all looking to you for guidance, ideas, support, feedback. And having been a leader and continuing to be that, you know, I'm always asking my guests if they read books or if they watch videos or they follow a certain individual, whether it be an author or a speaker that they rely heavily on or that they derive a lot of value from in terms of leadership. And they also share it with others for their leadership development or personal growth. I'd be curious to hear what's either on your nightstand or on your phone that you listen to regularly that helps you in that space.
There's a lot there. So first of all, I've had the pleasure of working with wonderful people, and I do subscribe to the principle of servant leadership. I think the role of a leader is to remove barriers so those people who work for you can get the work done, in a sense. I tend to be hard on people who are not willing to make decisions and move forward on their own. And I tend to be very forgiving of people who make mistakes, because as long as they're trying, I'm happy. There's got to be an openness to that. So in terms of reading, I tend to read business books and leadership. I happen to love the book, which I read many years ago, but I reread Matsushita Leadership by Kotter, which is the story of Konosuke Matsushita, who was the founder of Panasonic, Matsushita Electric, and remarkable, remarkable man. And I think that's a great book. I tend to read, one of my favorite books that I read a while ago, and I just like the author and the way he thinks, is Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, who wrote a book called The Righteous Mind, about how people can go down the path of being thinking they're rational, but really being very emotional and fragmented. And it's a book that's more about thinking. There's a wonderful book entitled Morality by Jonathan Sacks, which I find to be just fantastic. In the business sense, I really like the works of Taleb, you know, who wrote The Black Swan. And he's an interesting guy. And in the introduction to The Black Swan, and his contention is often that major upheavals do occur and change things dramatically, and it's not all gradual. And he, in the introduction to his book, he says he really got that philosophy because he grew up in Beirut, when Beirut was the Paris of the Mideast. And look what happened. It blew up. So there's a lot of books. There's another book which I love. You shouldn't get me started on books. I also really like certain novels. There's a book called entitled Cutting for Stone, and it's written by Abraham Verghese. And Abraham Verghese is assistant chief of the Department of Medicine at Stanford. Wonderful author. And it's, he's wrote it as a novel, but he grew up in Ethiopia and he wrote it based on a lot of what he saw growing up. And again, fantastic book. I just had my 16-year-old granddaughter read it, and she absolutely loved it, now wants to be a surgeon based on reading Cutting for Stone. So, I love reading. So when you ask me to pick certain books, that's a tough one.
Well, I got a couple from you, and I think that that was outstanding. So thank you for that. Alan, I'm curious to know, as Laguna Health starts to grow, you're interviewing a lot of candidates, you're looking and sourcing and recruiting bright minds across the country, across the world, to come to work for Laguna Health and possibly even your team. So I'm curious, whenever you're interviewing for somebody or when you're looking at your own team for opportunities of promotion, what are three qualities that you look for in an individual to identify that this person would be a good fit for your organization or a good fit for the next role?
I look for, one thing I always look for is persistence. You have to be persistent in what you want and what you do, but you have to be pleasant about it. So being pleasantly persistent is one quality I look for. I look for creativity. And it doesn't matter if you're in business or in medicine or what you're in. I want people to be creative, and as part of that creativity, be questioning. Always be questioning. I don't want people to take what I say as holy writ. I just want them to be questioning all the time. And third, I need them to be able to take feedback constructively. I am open with everyone who works for me. I tend to say exactly what I think, and I expect the people around me to do the same. I can't stand people who are yes people, honestly. So those are the three things I'd highlight.
And I'm hopeful that the listeners absorbed that and internalized that, because that was also another factor for starting this podcast, was to help people recognize how they can advance their career in the right way. Alan, you've been a great guest, and I'm very appreciative of your insights. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience today about how to either advance their career or even prepare themselves for the next level role that, based on your experiences and your advice?
Best thing I can do is say, be fearless. And be open, what I'll call listen for opportunities. There's so many things, it's funny, I have four sons who are all very, very different. And I hope that what I've given them is that ability to change and to be fearless and to take chances. Because and when I certainly hire people and look for people who advance their career with me, that's what I look for. I also will tell you that when people do work for me, I tell them that I really do want them to always be looking for something else. Not because I plan to fire them, but because I want them to know that they can leave. I want them to stay with me and with my company because they want to, not because they have to.
That's a good perspective. Thank you for that, Alan. Alan, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you again for sharing with us your insights, your expertise. I'm excited to see how Laguna Health continues to help with at-home recovery using its products and helping with patients and providers and health plans communicate in a more effective fashion. And I wish you all the success in continuing to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.